Hey, this is Joe. I'm watching the Bears game, and you're listening to Mike Steven on Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much, Joe. Yes, the Bears. That's my protest because they're not in the Super Bowl this weekend. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 1008, and what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. The great Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN Radio studio, so hello to Bob, and a special hello to you, the listener of this program. And we have a great show coming your way today. We preview a live music and cabaret event on Valentine's Day next Saturday. Also, we learn about a local nonprofit organization working to serve youth in some Chicago neighborhoods and Nigeria. And do you love good food? Of course you do. I love food and I love local history. We hear from the author of a new book about the history of Chicago dining. And speaking of history, this week, the Chicago City Clerk, Anna Valencia, unveiled a new website that features over 800 audio clips of the Chicago City Council between the years 1970 and 2012. This is so cool. The city released these clips through the Internet Archive, which is online at archive.org. And I am just having so much fun going through and listening to these pieces of Chicago history. It's really neat. Check out this clip from 1979 when Mayor Jane Byrne called a special meeting to increase membership of the police board to 9 members and for the consideration of her appointments to the police board. Now, this clip might seem pretty unremarkable, but look, I'll be honest with you. We're just checking this out because there's the greatest Chicago accent you'll hear in a long time. Listen to this.
City Clerk Walter S. Kozabowski will please read the call for the special meeting of the City Council.
To the members of the City Council, I, Jane M. Byrne, Mayor, do hereby call a special meeting of the City Council of the City of Chicago to be held on Thursday, April 26, 1979, at 10 a.m. in the City Council Chambers of the City of Chicago for the purpose of introducing an ordinance amending Chapter 11-2 of the Municipal Code of the Chicago to increase the membership of the police board to 9 members and for the consideration of my appointments to the police board and for no other purpose whatsoever. Very truly yours, Jane N. Byrne, Mayor.
Thank you.
Oh my God, that is amazing. Chapter 11-2, the city council. Come on. What a just a perfect nasally Chicago accent. I love it. That was actually City Clerk Walter Kozabowski at the time. He was elected in 1979 to the city clerk's position, and he resigned in 1993 after he pleaded guilty to corruption charges, of course. So that tracks. Oh, man. Here's another clip. This one's from 46 years ago, February of 1980. This was a council meeting, or council meeting, as you say, maybe, held related to a dispute between personnel of the Chicago Fire Department and the administration of the city. And you even get a little Eddie Burke here in the beginning. Check this out.
Alderman Burke.
Mr. President, I'm going to move the adoption of this resolution.
Point of order. Point of order. Point of order.
Chair recognizes Alderman Overton.
The President, a call for this meeting was issued, which states that the purpose of the meeting is to hear testimony from representatives of the fire union and the city city negotiating teams and to thereafter recommend any action. It seems to me, as you yourself ruled just a couple of weeks ago, that we have to follow the order of the call for the special meeting. And the first item on the agenda is to hear from the parties. Now, I don't see how we can consider resolutions. There's some merit to Alderman Burke's resolution if it was made more specific until we have undertaken what the call of the meeting was for. I think that's what we all want to hear, is just where the parties are now.
I find that your point of order is out of order. I find that the motion... We have a choice in this body.
I love how you can hear people getting audibly just annoyed. Is that our guy Kaz in there with the, come on? I don't know. I love how everyone's into it, though. And here's this clip. We come to December of 2008. This is the meeting where the city council voted 40-5 to approve the infamous parking meter deal. This is a clip of one of the five dissenting aldermen, Leslie Hairston. Check it out.
But the problem that I have is not what was done, but how it was done. I still don't have the answers that I asked yesterday. And I sat in the hearing. I don't know who we are dealing with. I do not know the names of the people. And I don't want to read the names of the people in the newspaper when they have been indicted. Or read the names in the newspaper when they're off in the islands gallivanting and cavorting. That's not one. And the purpose of these committee hearings is for us to ask questions, but also for us to get answers. And you have not provided those answers other than J.P. Morgan and Morgan Stanley. And we know what their reputations are like.
Yeah, and we know how that parking meter deal ended up. Oh, boy. Well, check out the Internet Archive. It's online at archive.org. Just search for Chicago City Council. It is so cool to hear this stuff, especially in a city where the government isn't known for its transparency, shall we say. It's a pretty fascinating listen. One of the things I just love about Chicago is how we can eat our way through it. I mean, you think of all the diversity in food, and that's great. And then think about the rich history this city has when it comes to cuisine. Mike Gebert is a local food journalist, and his new book is called The Chicago Way, An Oral History of Chicago Dining. It gives us an inside look at some of the lesser known food history in the city. It is available right now wherever you get your books. And Mike Gebert is here with us on Outside the Loop. Mike, great to talk to you again, man. How are you?
And you too. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great.
This book, I got to say, all right, this is a huge book. I mean, what is it, like 500 something pages?
Yes.
This is amazing. And you know, I think that there are a lot of books on history of Chicago, and that's great. But this is specific. This is food history. And so this book is kind of written in a way where it includes a lot of oral history. Tell us what you were setting out to do here with this book.
Well, the idea actually came from the publisher, Doug Seibold, with Agate Publishing, which is based in Evanston. He's done a lot of food-related books. He did Hot Doug's book. He did Who's Your Mama's Cookbook. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had done one about Chicago theater over roughly the same time, which is the 60s to the present. And they were looking for another subject. And presumably they're working on a basketball book somewhere. But they came. He came to me and said, you know, you want to do one about Chicago food? And I said, sure. Because on the theory that when a publisher asks you to do a book and is willing to pay for it and print it, you should probably do what he says.
Of course.
anyway, you know, I've been kind of a, you know, food of all types guy. I went, from Italian beef, Chicago barbecue, Mexican food, whatever. This is really focused on kind of an area I haven't always paid that much attention to, which is the high end, for a simple reason, that it's about the restaurants that got kind of national and international attention and that helped really spawn hot new neighborhoods. I mean, you know, the book starts with Lincoln Park as this sort of, you know, gang-ridden, low-rent area and mm-hmm. just goes from there. So it's really about kind of the evolution of the city as restaurants changed, as neighborhoods changed. A big part of it is women moving into upscale kitchens. You know, it's one of the things that, you know, we all know the Mad Men era, what it was like, but still to hear women say that chefs were telling them, oh, I can't hire you. It would be too distracting for the men. You know, as if, you know, guys are sitting there, you know, stuffing pheasants, and all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, she looks great today.
Right.
You know,
right.
That kind of thing. So, you know, just a lot of stuff about how the city has changed and how our world has changed. I mean, obviously food has become much more important to people in recent years. We watch shows about food, you know, game shows, competition shows, every kind of thing. So it's really about that evolution over 50, 60 years in Chicago.
And like I said before, I love that this is kind of in the style of an oral history. I mean, you have some of your own writing in there. But then you have a bunch of interviews. I mean, a lot of interviews with folks who were there at the beginning and kind of tracking that change over time from their point of view.
Yeah, you know, I did a lot of video editing in the past, and this really was kind of put together almost like video. I'm looking for that snappy quote that you then cut on to the next person and things like that. There's a little bit of me just to kind of guide it along, but as unobtrusively as possible. I really like the stories, you know, if a restaurant, if I have like half a dozen people from a restaurant, talking to them and letting them tell the story and move it to the next step. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's neat because you get an inside look into, you know, some of the places that maybe we've all heard of. I know, like you were talking about before, you start the book off and you're talking about areas like Lincoln Park, and then you go into the downtown area and places like Pump Room, which is kind of legendary, and you talk about Maxime's, and maybe some of these places, some of them have gone to the wayside now, but some of the folks that you talked to were there early on, and they give us kind of this peek into what it was like back in the heyday.
Yeah, well, I mean, what was happening? I mean, a big thing that happened was that we got actual French chefs. You know, before that, we sort of had what was called continental cuisine, which was sort of French cuisine, but maybe like from 50 years earlier. And we started getting real chefs from France who were interested in the things that we all take for granted now. You know, they wanted to buy produce from farmers, not out of a bird's eye box of frozen green beans or whatever. And, you know, so there's a lot of that sort of developing the farmers' networks, basically the infrastructure of the modern food era. Then we got American chefs who were interested in, you know, doing an American version of that. The obvious famous one is Charlie Trotter, but there were others. I mean, Michael Foley is another one who was sort of Trotter before Trotter, and was just developing relationships with farmers of various sorts and with fishmongers and cheesemakers and, you know, wine growers and all these things. I mean, this had to be built, and these are the people who built it up and changed the way we eat. I mean, one of the things that floored me early on is the chefs and other people in the restaurant saying that Americans drank coffee all through the meal in, say, the 60s.
Wow.
And, you know, and never, you know, you didn't have wine, and, you know, that a taste for that and knowing what was any good had to be built, basically.
It's incredible, too, because not just the downtown area you focus on, you also go out into the neighborhoods. And I know that in one section of the book, you were talking about what was going on in Wicker Park and Logan Square. And, you know, just those areas, too, kind of like Lincoln Park. I mean, I remember I moved into Wicker Park in the early 2000s. And it was a little different than it is today. And so you had some places that were up and coming, and, you know, people were living in these restaurants that worked there. And so you've had those stories of really working from the ground up.
Yeah. I mean, these areas weren't like hot areas full of college kids from DePaul or whatever. They, you know, they were sometimes kind of rough neighborhoods, certainly working class neighborhoods and with a lot of immigrant populations. And, you know, so it's a story of gentrification, which is not always a positive thing. But nevertheless, I mean, the fact that Chicago was revitalized and didn't turn into Detroit at its worst or something like that is in part because restaurants kept it a lively, interesting city.
Yeah, and I think that it gives the city character. You know, we talk about the character of Chicago and the character of these neighborhoods, and certainly the restaurants really helped define those sort of characteristics of different parts of Chicago and the cuisine. I mean, like, you think about the history, really food tells the story in terms of who we are as a people. And that's something that struck me as I was reading some of these accounts, like you talked about while drinking coffee all throughout dinner at one point, and how things have changed. But there's some history in the actual food, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, definitely different kinds of food came along. I mean, it's certainly one of the reasons. I mean, when I came here, it was so interesting. Some of it was cuisine that I might know somewhat, but was on a higher level here. I mean, Mexican is certainly like that. And then there's cuisines that I'd never seen before in my life. You know, I mean, who goes for Polish food? You know, certainly no one in Kansas where I grew up, we didn't have any of that. Right. So, you know, there's just a lot of things to discover if you were willing to go out there. And, you know, so part of what I talk about too is about media in this time and how people discovered these things. You know, the early reviewers, I mean, that really starts in the 70s with Chicago Magazine. And then later on, there's a chapter about, I guess you'd kind of call it like citizen reviewing or something like that. There's bloggers, there's things like LTH Forum, Chow Hound.
Right.
And, you know, and also, I mean, a lot of the early media in that time, like Steve Dolinsky doing The Hungry Hound or Check Please, was about regular people's places. You know, Dolinsky loves places in strip malls, that's where the good food is. And Check Please was always people touting some place in their own neighborhood for other people to discover.
And we all kind of really were kind of waiting to hear what the next episode of Check Please was going to be about. I mean, that was like incredibly popular. I remember, and you talk about this in your book, I mean, the print journalism when it came to food, and you talk to some of these journalists in your book, in the 90s and 2000s, that kind of gives way to, like you were saying, the bloggers and LTH Forum, which was really popular. I think I interviewed someone from LTH Forum like multiple times on my show like years ago. But that's
what you're reviewing one right now.
I know.
Actually,
I was going to say, I know you are an LTH Forum alum. And yeah. This is when we get into the neighborhoods, and it really, like, that journalism piece kind of takes off. And I know you and I have talked about food journalism before, but you kind of track that. And at first, you know, it was, like you say, Chicago Magazine, then the Trib kind of gets into the game, then really gets into the game. So it's a really interesting lens to even just think about the journalism of food history.
Right, because how would you know about these things? I mean, it's not like someplace opens on 69th Street that you would hear that in on the north side. Right. So, you know, someone kind of had to point you there. And that was, you know, it was great, the people who did that. And they had a real effect. I mean, there's no doubt that a lot of those places got a lot of business out of the fact of, you know, turning up on whatever these sort of, in many ways, homebrew approaches to media were. So,
one thing you talk about in the book that I thought it was really interesting, just because I remember it for so long here, you have a chapter dedicated to Let Us Entertain You. And I knew that it was kind of a big deal around here. I guess I just didn't know the extent to which it's a big deal. But really, this impacts Chicago with Melman, Rich Melman, doing this.
Yeah, and Chicago and really the whole country. I mean, you see other groups that are clearly modeled on what Let Us was doing back then in other cities. This idea, and I mean, it's really kind of making dining out into a form of showbiz. You know, they would do things that, I mean, there's sort of a real cuisine there. Cafe Baba Reba, say, was Spanish tapas, but at the same time, you know, he got the costumes for all the staff from like a theatrical costume supplier. So they're all dressed like they're in a marching band somewhere. And that was just part of the fun. You know, you just never knew quite what was going to happen in one of those places.
Well, Ed DeBevick's, I mean, right there.
Yes.
You know? I mean, they would yell at you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice. I found a veteran of Ed DeBevick's to kind of talk about what that was like from the inside. So
it's really a great story. And I know, like we were talking about it here, there's so much in the book. Again, it's called The Chicago Way, an oral history of Chicago dining. Now, Mike, this is, like we've been talking about, an extensive book. And you have been working on this for years. Tell us about your process here, because there's so much work that's gone into this book.
Well, the process was I signed the contract and then the whole world ends. You know, that was when COVID happened, literally within a week or so. And so, I mean, I knew I could do the book. I wasn't sure if there'd still be a restaurant business when I got to the end of it. But the question for me was, you know, if I talk to people who are in restaurants and they're in the middle of possibly closing them forever, they're not going to be in the greatest frame of mind to talk about, you know, tell me about opening Blackbird.
Right.
You know, So I kind of stalled on talking to a lot of the big names. I focused, you know, one, I wanted to actually get down the COVID experience while it still existed, because I think we forget that stuff so much. I mean, who thinks now about, oh, I had to show a card to get into a restaurant, or I had to eat in a plastic igloo outside from the restaurant, stuff like that. I mean, I just tried to get a lot of that down. But also, I mean, I knew this was a chance to focus on the people whose restaurants were long gone. They're going to be less sensitive about, you know, about the COVID stuff, because their places closed 20 years ago. So, you know, that's where I'm talking to, like, Gordon Sinclair, whose Gordon was like the first kind of trendy New York and fairly gay style restaurant in River North, or, you know, Doris Bonchet, who's the widow of Jean Bonchet, and other people who worked at Le Francais, the famous French restaurant up in the Wheeling of all places. You know, so these were the people that I talked to first. Also, you're doing an oral history, talk to the oldest people first.
Right.
They may not be around. Actually, the book's been pretty good about that. I only know of one interviewee who has since passed away. But, you know, even so, you know, I just wanted to get some of them down first thing. If I hadn't talked to, say, Gordon Sinclair, I would have been kicking myself forever. So,
well, the book is called The Chicago Way, An Oral History of Chicago Dining. And it is really, really interesting. If you like Chicago history, if you like food, this is the book for you. Wherever you get your books, you could go check that out. The Chicago Way, An Oral History of Chicago Dining. Mike Gebert is the author of that book, and he's also a food journalist here in Chicago. He does a great job. Mike, it's always so much fun talking with you. Congratulations on this book. I know this is many years in the making, and here it is. So we should celebrate that. We should all go out to dinner to a nice restaurant tonight, get the book, and enjoy it. So, Mike, thanks so much for talking today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Valentine's Day is right around the corner. Do you have any plans lined up yet? Well, we can go take in a performance by the Sideshow Villains. It's their Deviant Cabaret Seven Deadly Sins Masquerade on Valentine's Day next weekend at 7 p.m. at the Copernicus Center. That's located at 5216 West Lawrence Avenue in Chicago. Dante Ingram is the band leader for the Sideshow Villains, and she is here with us today. Dante, nice to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's nice to talk to you again, too.
So the Sideshow Villains, I think your group is so cool because it's a mix of music and dance and this visual performance. Just for, you know, the sake of refreshing our brains here, remind us, what are you all about with the Sideshow Villains?
The music is predominantly about crime. So all the original songs are about various forms of deviant behavior.
Of course.
And And they're very kind of cinematic. And so in order to stage these songs, we really wanted it to be more of a theater performance, more of a show than just going to see a band. And so I got in touch with my friends, one of whom is Mark the Knife Fay, who is a dangerous comedian and will frequently be seen at my shows balancing a lawnmower on his face.
Of course. Yeah. And just, you know, he's a dangerous comedian. That's right there. That's all you need to know.
Exactly. And then I do aerial silks as well as marionette puppetry as well as music. So I've also established some really interesting friendships and connections within those two circles in Chicago, and luckily have some just really amazing circus performers that are able to come out and participate in these shows. So we've got a Sear Wheel performer, that's Haley Larson. We have a new Straps performer this year. I'm really excited about that. Missile Kid. And
okay.
Dahlia Sheffy is coming back to do Rope. She did our first show, and we're really excited to have her back. Lydia Tewksbury is another new performer who's going to be working with us, and she does this really amazing thing called Lyra or Aerial Hoop, and I call it the Circle of Pain. It is just a giant metal hoop, and she's able to just do inexplicable, absolutely gorgeous things with it. She's really, really cool. And we have Michael House. Devarar is also coming back to do Cube, which is another painful apparatus. It's a big cube made of metal.
Wow. All right. So you've mentioned some things here. I think we need to just unpack. So when we go see a Sideshow Villains show, I mentioned that there's music. You were talking about some of the more circus-y stuff with aerial acrobatics and the painful squares and cubes and all that stuff. So what can we expect? How does the show work?
Well, there's going to be a depiction of each of the seven deadly sins. A couple of them are so much fun that we're depicting them twice. So, and I failed to mention, Camille Swift is coming back, not just with one act, but with two. And her first act has never been seen before, so I'm super excited about it. And she will be depicting Eve, and then she'll also be bringing her whips act back.
Okay. So for
lust.
Of course. Right. So when we go to the show, again, we want to mention that the show is coming up on Valentine's Day. How romantic. The Seven Deadly Sins, you know, got to love that. That's 7 p.m. at the Copernicus Center, 5216 West Lawrence Avenue. Just an amazing room, historic room. So when we go there, it's a little bit of like the musical performance, and then you are going to, in the audience, the audience members will be treated to this aerial acrobatic stuff and all kinds of kind of sideshow things that will be happening.
That's right. Yeah.
And so in terms of the music, you know, we mentioned it a little bit before, but this is kind of, you said cinematic, and I think that your music is, you know, right out of a movie soundtrack, let's just say. I could easily see this in some film noir or something like that. But think about like a smoky jazz lounge. That's kind of the vibe you're going for. Tell us about the music itself.
Each song had like an influence, an acoustic influence, as well as a subject matter influence. And so there's one song in particular, True Until Death. And for that one, I just had envisioned this gritty Western Cormac McCarthy kind of environment that is kind of wonderfully like creepy and spaghetti Western all at the same time. And so there's a little bit of like Ennio Morricone and like influence acoustically in that particular one.
You take out the garbage and I clean out the sink, and we won't talk, no we won't talk, no we won't say anything about the body and the kitchen or the room under the stair. We won't fight, no, we won't fight. You won't catch me unaware, because I love you true until death. Yes, I love.
There's always a combination between what you're hearing and some of the visual imagery that's in the lyrics.
And so this show, we want to mention it again, coming up at the Copernicus Center, That's next Saturday. That's Valentine's Day, 7 p.m., 5216 West Lawrence Avenue. So for this show, you're doing all that. You mentioned you have a bunch of guests. So if we want tickets, if we want to book this, what's the best way to do that?
You can go on the Gateway Theater at Copernicus website. That's one way you can get them. You can also go to my website, which is sideshowvillains.com. And we're also on a whole bunch of different platforms like The Reader. You can find us. I believe that we're in their featured area on the on that website. So there's multiple ways to find the show.
I love it. And such a cool mix of, you know, this music and dance and performance, aerial performance. So people will be in the air. I know we've talked about this before, Dante, but you're up there. I mean, you are high up there with other folks and you're doing all kinds of acrobatics. This is a full on show.
Oh, yes. And this time I will be in a raven costume singing with a raven marionette on the silks.
You're multi-talented. I don't know how you do that, but also, how do you practice that? Like, is that something you have a warehouse you go to and just kind of practice being that high up and doing all those things?
There's a couple different studios where lots of circus folks go and train, and they're very lovely about accommodating strange props.
Well, we could see it all. It's romantic. The Deviant Cabaret, Seven Deadly Sins Masquerade. It's on Valentine's Day next Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Copernicus Center, 5216 West Lawrence Avenue in Chicago. Go to sideshowvillains.com. You could get tickets that way and check out all of the cool information on that site about the group Sideshow Villains. Dante Ingram is the band leader of the Sideshow Villains. Hey, Dante, it's always so much fun talking to you. An amazing thing that you do, combining all of these different art forms together. And I'm sure the show is going to be great next Saturday. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
The local nonprofit, A Boy and His Dream, is based in Chicago, focused on providing mentorship and other essential resources to underserved communities here and internationally. On February 21st, this organization has a fundraiser in Chicago. With us to talk about this and the impact of his group's work is Sonny Ayigbe. He's the founder of A Boy and His Dream, online at aboyandhisdream.org. Sonny, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you. You know, I just really want to appreciate everything WGN Radio is doing. And you guys are definitely, you know, adding an impact in this community. You know, I'm just grateful for being able to invite it to your show. Thank you so much.
You got it, man. I appreciate that. And, you know, it's something because we were going to have you on the show last week, but then you were in New York speaking at the United Nations. What were you doing there?
Well, as you understand, you know, we've been partnering with United Nations for the past 3 years. I've spoken there, you know, I spoke on the issues affecting women and children and the issues affecting people in general across Africa. And because of the kind of the job, the work, the project that we do in Africa, packing meals to feed underprivileged children, you know, installing playground and education. So invited me to come speak on those issues. You know, what are these issues? How are they affecting the people? What are the possible solutions to resolving this issue? It was amazing. You know, so and then this time around, they invited me to come become a partner with the NGO division at the United Nations. So we more than 5,000 NGOs registered to become a partner, and A Boy and His Dream got selected. And a guy recommended.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that was 3 days of, you know, deliberation. And 350 delegates from different countries were the one who was screening and making sure that all these NGOs qualified from paperwork to, you know, recommendations and stuff like that. We were highly recommended. And we went through the process. I'm glad that we're able to go through that. Now we can get involved into problem solving. And then all these problems are not only the problems affecting people here in Chicago, it's affecting people across the whole world.
Right.
You know, we just happen to be part of it.
Right. And that's kind of what you're about here. So your work focuses on Chicago and underserved communities here, but also across, you're talking about Africa, specifically Nigeria. I know you've been working there. Tell us how this idea got started to do this work. And I think it's interesting that it's very similar around the world.
It is similar. So what happened is that I'm going after the issues, the problems that affected me as a child growing up in Nigeria. So what happened was that I was born out of wedlock. Mm-hmm. And in my community, being born out of wedlock is totally is not something that it's supported at all. And I was rejected because of the culture. I was rejected. And then growing up, I suffered. All this affected me. And I couldn't really get the resources I needed to grow up. And from elementary school to high school, I went through a tough time as a child. So, but after I finished my university and I got a very narrow opportunity to come to the United States, I came in here and I went to Purdue University and I had a bachelor's in accounting and finance and master's in finance. And I quickly wrote a book and told my story. And after writing my book, sharing my story, and God gave me a vision saying, listen, there are so many children going through everything that you went through. Let's find a way to do it. So I set up a nonprofit organization called Born His Dream to raise funds, to help fund underprivileged children. And the programs that we do are scholarships and mentorship. We mentor youth to succeed in college. So you graduate from college. We graduate from college and then you join the program. We have a 4-year commitment per child. So far, we have mentored and sponsored over 45 students to college and giving out over 75 to 78 scholarships so far. And then we mentor all these children, myself and my team. I have a team, board of director. We do all that. And in Africa, we are building playground and giving school books, school materials, and speaking engagement. Also giving scholarships in Africa and for children to go to school. So I have personally mentored over 15 to 20 students. And 3 of those students are serving on the board now. And I do want them to grow up and be able to give back and so that we can continue to make it, you know, sustainable and impactful. So my focus is here in Chicago and Nigeria. And then we're looking forward to making sure that we continue to raise funds to fund all this program. And again, one strong point that we have is that we don't get paid doing it. All the proceeds raised go straight to problem solving. Nobody get paid.
So I think it's amazing because, again, the work that you're doing here in Chicago with mentorships and scholarships, it is very similar to what you're doing in Nigeria. And something both places seem to have in common is this sense of resilience in the face of adversity. And I think that is incredible to think about here because we have folks in Chicago who are struggling, but they're resilient. They want to get better and you're working with them. And folks also on the other side of the world in Nigeria, same thing. So do you see that commonality of resilience in the two places?
Yes. You know, the resilience here is different from the resilience in Nigeria. Out in Nigeria, there's no resource here at all. People are built differently. They go all day without, but they still find a way to survive. But here you have more resources here, but most of the children here, they don't even know how to harness their resources because they don't know how to utilize that. And that's what we're coaching now, to showing them how to utilize those resources. You know, instead of going against what happened to you, create something to prevent it happening in the future. So yeah, there are different kind of adversity. The ones in Africa, it's a little bit tougher because they don't have a lot of resources. So I'm tougher. You know, like the problems that we have, the way people process here is different from the way I process. So when, for example, you're born in America and you see problem, I already see a solution because I've been through it. So resilience is the key. If you can beat the situation, you can survive anywhere.
I think that is such an interesting perspective, because how often do we get to hear about what it's like outside of Chicago or even outside of the United States? But you're saying that in Nigeria, I mean, the resources are so scarce that it's like, you know, how do you overcome even maybe the smallest problem? And, you know, relatively speaking, folks here, even though they might be struggling, they are maybe have a leg up to those other folks in Nigeria. But really, like I think this is incredible that you are bringing levels of success to both Chicago and Nigeria, navigating both spaces. That's got to be, I would think, a lot of work, because here, like you were saying, lots of resources to tap into, but over there, not as much.
Yeah. So the resources that we have in Nigeria is it's nothing. There's no resources at all. A child can live on that $1, and to even acquire that $1, it's hard. But here, you give a child that have access to Apple Watch. That child is still complaining about not having money to eat. And that child is still complaining about not having what they need. But meanwhile, that child can live off $1 in Africa. This is the reason why it's so important to provide more to those children in Africa and helping these children here, over here, to identify the resources available. But trust me, the problems that we have here and the problem that we have in Africa is not to compare to each other, but they're different kind of adversity. It affects those children differently. Right. So the point is that the moment they are able to get the help that they need, and from all the mentorship that we have going on, those are the support that they need. And that's why I stepped up. That's why my teammates, they step up to be able to help these children and all out.
And we can step up to help out the organization A Boy and His Dream. Again, it's online at aboyandhisdream.org. There is a fundraiser coming up on Saturday, February 21st from 6 to 10 p.m. This is at the Midland Hotel at 172 East Adams in Chicago. Tell us about what's coming up on February 21st.
So we have a program coming up. It's called our annual gala. So we do one annual gala per year to raise funds. It's called the Legacy Gala. On that day, we have Samantha Chapman from ABC Chicago and Ryan Cheverini. They both are co-hosting the event. So we're going to be raising $100,000 that day to fund our scholarship program, a mentorship program, and also for our food drive event here in Chicago. Then we also use that as a part of that fund to purchase a playground and install for children in Africa. And then we have all kinds of people from all walks of life coming from all over, across the nations. And people are coming from Nigeria. People are coming from, I have a friend coming from England. So it's going to be an amazing moment. And we have our international artist that's coming from Ukraine to sing. And the Johan Experience is going to be there performing. They're going to be drink. They're going to be a sit and dinner. And I expect everyone coming that day looking good, dressed nice, and hear from these students testify. And our guest appearance that day is one of our students who's graduating from University of Missouri Electrical Engineering. He will be speaking on that day.
Well, this is an event that sounds like it's going to be great. Again, February 21st, 6 to 10 p.m. at the Midland Hotel on Adams in Chicago. And to get tickets, we just go to your website, aboyandhisdream.org.
aboyandhisdream.org/event, and click on it, the ticket is there. We have spent about 300 people that day. Spread the news, spread the awareness, bring people to come hear the impact that we've made in Chicago and in Nigeria.
Going to be a great event, February 21st, fundraiser for A Boy and His Dream. Again, check out the website, aboyandhisdream.org, doing tremendous work in Chicago and in Nigeria. And Sunny Ayigbe is the founder of A Boy and His Dream. Sunny, it was great talking to you today. Good luck with everything going forward, and keep doing what you're doing, man.
Thank you so much. Thank you for this opportunity. And you keep doing what you're doing. Together, we will keep uplifting the people in our community, because we need it right now. You know, God knows that we need it. Thank you so much.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 1008 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks, of course, to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN radio studio. I hope you have a wonderful week. I'll talk to you again next time, right here on Outside the Loop.